Alright, so you guys probably already know what this is all about, but for those who still haven't heard the news yet or have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, on March 25th of this year, former professional Super Smash Bros. Melee player Hax Money passed away at the age of 30. I debated whether or not I should make a video discussing this, but as someone who's covered Hax's situation at length and was one of the primary mouthpieces and advocates for Hax over the past 4 years, I feel that I'm obligated to say something. So I'm just gonna rant to you guys about everything that transpired from the beginning until now. I was originally gonna do this without a script, but then I started writing down some notes of like specific points that I wanted to get across, and then I figured, you know, why not just write a full-on script, so enjoy this while I put some gameplay footage in the background, you know, just like the old days. So on June 4th, 2021, Hax uploaded his now infamous video titled Evidence.zip2, an expose against fellow competitor Leffen. This video has already been beaten to death, so I'm not going to spend too much time discussing it, but the bottom line is that this video sucked. The insane hyperbolic comparisons, the extreme language, and the armchair psychoanalysis used throughout the video completely overshadowed any argument Hax tried to make. I'll just play some short clips from it so you guys understand just how bad this video was.
There's a quote that goes, "The greater the crime perpetrated by the leadership, the less likely the people will ever believe their leader's capable of perpetrating such an event." That is, unfortunately, a Hitler quote, but it's one that's very applicable to the current situation. The funny thing is, Leffen is basically trying to turn his phone into the Death Note. Through the use of modern technology and a good understanding of crowd psychology, it's actually possible to create a Death Note nowadays, and people need to be wary of that. When I beat Leffen at Genesis 7, I was wearing a red pair of Adidas pants with white stripes on them. These pants would become synonymous with my run at that tournament. A few months after Genesis 7, someone sent me a picture they took of Leffen streaming. Leffen was wearing a red Adidas shirt with white stripes on its sleeves while editing a digital controller's button layout. Again, this wasn't a coincidence. It was a psychopath's way of showing that he wants revenge. The fact that I can look at the state of Smash in 2021 and reasonably compare it to totalitarianism means that the prophecy has become all too real.
I think you guys get the idea. This video was a complete mess. With all of that being said, that does not mean that there are no valid reasons to dislike or think poorly of Leffen. For years, Leffen was, and has been, a notoriously toxic and disliked figure in not just the Smash community, but in practically every other community he engages with. There are legitimate criticisms to be made regarding his behavior in the years leading up to Hax's video, and many of these criticisms were present in the video, albeit argued very poorly. Just to name a few, the sections regarding the Hungrybox harassment campaign, the metagame documentary revision, and the 2020 Smash Me Too movement were not entirely without merit, and I believe there were valid discussions to be had regarding these topics. But at the same time, you can't just say this is an example of state terrorism in the context of a Nintendo party game community and expect people to take you seriously. Even if there is a legitimate claim to be made that Leffen abuses his power and influence within the community, the extreme nature of the video completely neutered any claim Hax tried to make, which is why Hax retracted and revised his video due to widespread negative reception. Now, considering everything I just said, I think if tournament organizers wanted to punish Hax for making a video like this, a temporary ban from competing in tournaments of up to 6 months on the basis of harassment would have been acceptable. I did not, and still do not, believe a ban on the basis of defamation was appropriate due to many of Hax's concerns having merit. Unfortunately, the TOs felt very differently, as on June 24th, 2021, they came together to ban Hax on the basis of both defamation and harassment. More specifically, he was banned for directed and malicious intimidation, harassment, or bullying of any participant, whether by language or conduct, and malicious gossip with the intent of manipulating the victim's social circle, defamation of character. And if that wasn't bad enough, the ban was set to have an indefinite length. This might just be me, but I personally think all bans in the community should have explicitly defined lengths, whether it be temporary or permanent. All an indefinite ban does is leave everyone involved in limbo where there is no timetable for when the banned individual is allowed to return. It honestly reads as if the TOs couldn't agree on a ban length, which only goes to highlight their inability to come together and properly carry out due process. Anyways, a few months later, on August 16th, Mikey the Cheat would post a follow-up document in an attempt to provide further justification for Hax's ban. Instead, the document somehow managed to highlight even more issues with how the case was being handled, Again, just like Hax's video, this document has also been beaten to death. But to summarize, in this document, Mikey compared Hax's videos to QAnon human trafficking conspiracy theorists, framed Hax as both malicious and violent, despite later stating that neither assessment of Hax is charitable, straight up defended a clear, cut and dry instance of Leffen lying, and would even have to go back and edit a part of the document where he got information wrong. This entire statement sucks, and displayed an inability to remain unbiased while handling the case. And if Mikey's statement reflected the opinions of the other TOs, then there was almost no chance that Hax was coming back anytime soon. Fortunately, there was one line that managed to give every one of Hax's supporters a sliver of hope. I would also like to be clear, as there was some confusion, that indefinite is not the same as permanent. It wasn't much, but it was good news regarding Hax's situation, and it gave us hope that maybe one day Hax would be allowed to return. But regardless, it was clear that the community and its leadership had made up its mind on Hax and his videos. And as a member of this community, this didn't sit right with me. I began playing Melee when I was just 13 years old.
Hey guys, it's the Chaz, and today I wanted to show you guys how to wobble with Ice Climbers in Melee.
And I've loved this game and community ever since. But that all changed during the summer of 2021. Seeing the community immediately dismiss Hax and write him off as a deranged lunatic when I felt there was a legitimate conversation to be had in regards to Leffen's conduct over the years certainly rubbed me the wrong way. I'm gonna be incredibly blunt when I say this. Leffen fucking sucks. And just because Hax's videos were bad, doesn't mean that Leffen has done nothing wrong. And this is coming from someone who was a bit of a Leffen fan prior to Hax's videos. In fact, here was my initial reaction to Evidence.zip 2 before getting the chance to watch it. Either Hax is making the most elaborate, yet extremely distasteful joke imaginable, or he has really fallen from grace. I'll react to the video when I wake up, but some of the lines I've seen are satirically bad. But when I actually took the time to watch Hax's video from start to finish, and tried to look past the extreme and unhinged presentation, I began to understand Hax's perspective, and I realized that maybe Leffen wasn't the person I thought he was. So when the community immediately jumped to dismiss the video, I felt like speaking up and giving my two cents on the situation. At the time, my channel only had a little over 1,000 subs, and I was primarily making Melee guides and YouTube shorts, but I decided that this channel would be the platform I'd use to voice my concerns regarding the community. On August 13th, I would post a video titled, "The Current State of the Smash Community." This video was surprisingly well received, and even caught the attention of a larger YouTuber who also covered drama and controversy within the Smash community. Seeing such a positive reception to my video convinced me that I should keep making more. After Mikey released his statement, I began my now iconic mini-series called The Anti-Haxers, where I broke down the Hax situation in detail. This is also around the same time I first got into contact with Hax, and started discussing our plans moving forward. Hax told me he was going to make an apology video to the community and focus on getting unbanned, and I was actually in favor of this. Pretty much everyone involved figured that the best course of action was to have Hax shut up while other people argued on his behalf. With this strategy, we could still try to initiate some form of dialogue on the subject while also maximizing the chances of him getting unbanned. So from August to December, while Hax moved on to focus on his 1.03 controller mod project, I continued to make my anti-Haxers videos, culminating in a 44-minute long video titled Leffen, a Liar and a Fraud, which is the most viewed video on this channel, currently sitting at over 1.7 million views. But while my videos were generally well received by the people who watched them, they failed to spark any meaningful discourse in the broader community. And for the few times people actually acknowledged me in my videos, I would just get dismissed as a drama vulture exploiting the community for views and trying to incite harassment against poor little Leffen. While at the very least it was someone other than Hax posting the videos against Leffen, it was clear that trying to convince the community that Hax was right wasn't going to work in getting him unbanned. To illustrate just how cooked the situation was, I want to fast forward a few months to June 14th, 2022. After meeting with his local community, New York City Melee, to discuss his ban, Hax called me to explain the situation. I don't have a recording or exact transcript of this call, but there were four points that I vividly remember. 1. Major TOs weren't going to unban him before his local scene. 2. Hax was facing a potential 2-year ban from NYC Melee events. For context, NYC Melee officially banned Hax in September 2021, so he'd be returning September 2023. 3. Some people on the panel, like DarkGenX, wanted Hacks unbanned sooner, but was ultimately outnumbered. But 4, most importantly, they specifically cited Hacks' claims against Leffen and Jisoo as the primary reason for the ban. For this section, I'm going to try to be as thorough as possible because this is a very serious topic that deserves to be treated with care. For everyone who's already knowledgeable about the whole Zero Jisoo Leffen situation, you can skip ahead to the timestamp provided on screen. Let me start out by saying that Zero 100% deserved to be banned for having inappropriate conversations with a 14-year-old when he was 19. We can acknowledge this fact while also acknowledging that Leffen and Jisoo pushed several false allegations against Zero as well, some of which were before Katie's Twitlonger was released. Just because Zero was later found to be guilty of an allegation made by a third party, that does not retroactively exonerate Leffen and Jisoo. Almost every single allegation that Leffen and Jisoo pushed against Zero has been disputed by either the alleged victims themselves or by witnesses who were present at the time of the alleged incident. And not only did Jisoo have to correct and retract one of the allegations from her mega document, but also had to delete said document as part of a legal settlement with Zero. And this starts to get even worse when you consider that, according to Leffen, he and Jisoo spoke to each other prior to making their allegations. I also need to point out that these were not the only false or questionable allegations Leffen pushed during this time. Other allegations include, but are not limited to, his road trip story of physical abuse where he severely exaggerated the number of times he was struck, the Mutaking allegations, which forced Mutaking to reveal very sensitive information to debunk, and a false allegation against Westballs, where once again, the alleged victim stated that the allegation was false. And as far as personal gain is concerned, Leffen explicitly mentioned how he gained loads of followers on every platform during the situation.
Honestly, I've been struggling with feelings of guilt because I've gained a lot of subscribers, a lot of followers, and attention because of these awful things happening.
And even made a chat command acknowledging the positive attention he was receiving at the time. It is a provable fact that Leffen collaborated with Jisoo, pushed multiple false allegations against like 4 different people, never apologized to any of them besides M2K, and was fully aware of what he stood to gain from speaking up during the summer of 2020. Whether or not he did all of it with malicious intentions could be debated. And sure, maybe Leffen, purely out of the kindness of his heart, just wanted to be an exclaim hero by amplifying the voices of as many victims as he could. But at what point does saying, you know, I think Leffen was being a little malicious and opportunistic when he pushed those allegations, start to become a valid opinion to hold? According to the TOs, the answer is apparently never, regardless of what the evidence says. It's ironic because one of the main criticisms of Hacks' videos was that he gave Leffen absolutely no charitability, but these TOs were completely unwilling to compromise and see any other perspective but their own. And even if you completely disagree with everything I just said and think Leffen was purely acting in good faith during July 2020, can you at the very least acknowledge that a 2-year ban for believing otherwise might be a little harsh and excessive? Again, as I said before, I think banning Hacks for harassment was completely warranted, but to ban him for defamation is to assert, for a fact, that Leffen has done absolutely nothing wrong and that Hacks' videos lacked any merit whatsoever, all while spitting in the face of everyone Leffen has wronged over the years and ignoring any evidence or citation that would suggest he's a bad person. While it had already been made pretty obvious over the past year, it was at this moment that we truly had to face the reality of the situation and make a tough yet necessary decision. We were never going to convince the TOs that they were wrong, and if we ever wanted to see Hacks compete in Melee again within a reasonable time frame, Hacks would have to cave to the community and condemn every single action he took against Leffen the previous year. While this was obviously not desirable given everything, it was really the only choice we had. Remember, no major TO was gonna unban Hacks before his local scene, meaning the longer he stayed banned from NYC, the longer he was banned globally. We needed to convince NYC to reduce his sentence, and the best way to do that was to address the single most important concern the TOs had with his videos. It was either that or wait until September 23rd, which wasn't gonna cut it for Hacks. So I told Hacks that he should fully apologize to Leffen and Jisoo and leave everything in the past. Hacks agreed, and about a month later, Hacks released an apology video on July 24th.
I must sincerely apologize to Leffen and also Jisoo. I'm sorry to both of you that I did not handle the situation better and that I let my emotions get the best of me during that time period.
And you know what? It actually worked. It was received extremely well by the public, but more importantly, we received word just a few days later that NYC Melee was leaning towards a January 1st, 2023 return date, an 8-month reduction from what they had initially planned. This was amazing news, as it seemed like step one of reintegrating hacks back into Melee was complete, and things were finally going to get better from here on out. But then, less than a week later, something very troubling happened. If you'll remember, in late 2021, Zero filed a defamation lawsuit against Jisoo. Well, around the same time we got the news from NYC Melee, I'd received word that Zero and Jisoo weren't going to trial, and were instead planning on reaching an out-of-court settlement. I told Hax about this new development, and this is where trouble began to brew. Hax immediately relapsed, and wanted to make a new video discussing Leffen and Jisoo. You know, the exact stuff he had just gotten banned for. Apparently, he sincerely believed that if he made the perfect video, using the settlement as evidence that he was right all along, he'd be able to convince the TOs that he was correct and would be able to get unbanned sooner. Now, obviously, this was a terrible idea. Even if there was a greater than zero chance that the TOs could be convinced, it was still not worth the risk whatsoever because A, he was literally right on the verge of getting unbanned. B, he had just apologized for doing this exact thing. C, he sucked at making videos, so it almost certainly wouldn't land. And D, I believed he should wait until after his lawsuit with Frame 1 concluded, before he made any more expose videos on the community. I tried to explain all of this to him, but surprisingly, he said he was willing to throw everything away if it meant standing up for truth and justice. In fact, he literally said, and I quote, "I have to lose my career here." Honestly, it seems completely unfathomable looking back, considering how much Hax was obsessed with Melee. He fully understood that he was risking all the progress we had just made less than a week ago, and he just didn't care, because he felt he was the only one capable of telling the real truth about Leffen, as if the community listened to him the first 4 times he tried. Anyone who's interacted with Hax for longer than 5 minutes knows what I mean when I say Hax could be incredibly stubborn and arrogant. If there's one thing that the TOs got 100% right about Hax, it's that when he's made up his mind, it is nigh impossible to get him to consider any other viewpoint. He would often have a very self-righteous mentality of, I'm the only human being in the history of the planet who's rationalized this, and it negatively impacted his ability to work with others and compromise. When he first brought up the idea of a Leffen and Jisoo video, and I had to remind him to let other people argue on his behalf, he told me that the videos needed to come from him because the community doesn't listen to me. Well, that was certainly true. Hax. They also didn't listen to you either! That's why we're in this situation in the first place! Ah! Eventually, I was able to talk Hax out of making the video for now, but this went on for several weeks where I would talk him out of it, and then the next day he came right back saying, "The truth must be spoken." On September 19th, NYC Melee put out their statement announcing that Hax was set to be conditionally unbanned beginning on January 1st, 2023. Yes, I said conditionally, because once again, nothing can just be straightforward with Melee TOs. Attached to his unban were a set of 4 clauses that Hax had to follow in order to play Melee again, which honestly made this unban feel more like probation rather than freedom. But at last, starting January 1st, Hax would no longer be banned from NYC Melee events. I made a video celebrating this decision, while still levying some criticism towards those 4 clauses the TOs included, but ultimately, I was pleased with their decision to give Hax a second chance. This was supposed to be the final video I made on the subject, as it seemed like this was the beginning of the return of Hax money into the community. Unfortunately, this couldn't have been further from the truth. On January 4th, 2023, Hax made his grand return in the NYC Melee weekly tournament series known as The Nightclub.
Formerly known as Hax's Nightclub, but that's neither here nor there.
And it actually went pretty well. There were... some issues. But overall, it seemed like the people there were very happy to see Hax's return to competition. So with Hax officially unbanned from his local scene, you'd expect there to be a sort of domino effect where other events started allowing Hax to attend their events, right? Well, Hax did get unbanned from some other places as well. Obviously, he was allowed at all the other NYC Melee events, but other notable tournaments include, but are not limited to, Hungrybox's online coinbox tournament, Smash Factor 10 in Mexico, Level Up Expo in Las Vegas, the off-season in Texas, Tipped Off 14, and DreamHack Atlanta, which were both held in Georgia. His attendance at these events also went very well, and it reminded everyone that hacks could be a positive influence within the community, even after his controversy. But outside of those events, Hacks's ban was still being upheld by the biggest tournaments in the community, and this didn't change as the year progressed. We had already known in December that Hacks wasn't going to be allowed at Genesis, but by the time September rolled around, Hacks had been banned from Battle of BC5, Ludwig's Championship Series, Gommel, SmashCon, Shine, the last Shine ever, mind you, and they still didn't let him play, and Riptide, just to name a few. This puzzled me, because I just assumed that once he got unbanned from NYC, it would all be smooth sailing. It was even more confusing because throughout the year, Hacks was actively attending events and wasn't causing any problems. Remember, the initial ban was in 2021. Since then, Hacks had completely bent the knee to the community in 2022 and displayed 8 months of good behavior in 2023. From my perspective, there was simply no valid justification to keep Hacks banned from major events. Yet it seemed like none of the major TOs wanted to unban him. What else was Hacks supposed to do to get unbanned? Why did it seem like all the major TOs were super reluctant to allow him at their events? So I made a video about it.
So I think these TOs owe us a new explanation for why Hacks, in 2023, is still a threat to the community, because this one clearly doesn't hold up at all. It is incredibly sloppy, biased, and cowardly, yet despite it being over 2 years old, Hacks' many apologies, his local community no longer deeming him a threat, and his 8 months of good behavior, absolutely no recourse has been done to reevaluate the ban. Which doesn't really make any sense, because in Mikey's statement he says, "I would also like to be clear, as there was some confusion, that in depth indefinite is not the same as permanent." So if he isn't permanently banned, then how long is he banned? Until next year? The year after that? It's gotta end at some point if it's not permanent.
This video was arguably my most concise and constructive one yet, even offering up the idea of a revamped conduct panel as a potential solution. But, just like all the videos before it, it fell on deaf ears and didn't seem to spark any discourse. I simply couldn't wrap my head around why Hacks still wasn't allowed to compete in these major tournaments. It wasn't until much later that I was told what the holdup might have been. You see, the Hacks case was one of the most polarizing amongst the TOs. There were TOs who really liked Hacks and wanted to unban him, but there were also a fair share of TOs who absolutely despised him, wanted nothing to do with him, and actively looked for reasons to keep him out of the scene. And that right there is the problem. There were some TOs who genuinely tried to reintegrate Hacks back into their events, but didn't due to the social pressure from the TOs who hated Hacks. And TOs who did decide to let Hacks play, such as NYC Melee, were met with a ton of backlash from other organizers who disagreed with the decision. Some TOs just really feel that they own the community and should have a say in every decision that goes on. Anyways, the bottom line was that Hacks wasn't allowed at as many tournaments as we had hoped, and he was beginning to grow more and more impatient as the year went on. It also didn't help that over that same time period, the Frame 1 trial kept getting delayed multiple times. Originally, when I first learned of the lawsuit's existence, the trial was going to be held on August 14th, 2022, but was then pushed back to June 9th, 2023, which then got pushed back to June 23rd, which then got pushed back to August 18th, which then got pushed back to October 6th, and then, after being told that there were going to be no more delays, we found out that the trial was going to be delayed once again because Greg Turbo's dad suddenly started having stroke-like symptoms. You can't make this up. Hacks didn't like that he was forced to sit in limbo for months on end, with little to no progress being made towards getting unbanned, and started looking for ways to speed up the process. He began flirting with the idea of making that Jisoo Leffen exposed video again, as a way to try and appeal his ban, and just like before, I attempted to talk him out of it because that was a really stupid idea for all the reasons I mentioned the last time he brought it up. But this time, Hacks didn't back down as easily as before. When it seemed like I convinced him for the 1,000th time, I was suddenly dragged into a separate chat with Hacks and one of his moderators as they both tried to tell me that I was wrong and that making the video was the best course of action. This was probably the most troubling news I could have possibly received at the time, that he had people directly in his ear telling him to do the one thing that would most certainly seal his fate. And it's not even like they were saying this in a screw the community, post how you really feel kind of way like before. They genuinely believed that if Hacks posted the video, the TOs would re-examine the facts of the case and conclude that Hacks wasn't actually wrong. Because, you know, fifth time's the charm. But while I disagreed with the way Hacks wanted to appeal his ban, I did support the idea of Hacks putting out some sort of appeal, especially after receiving the news that he wasn't allowed at the Big House 11. On October 20th, Hacks posted a statement on Twitter that reads as follows. Hey everyone, I'm releasing this because I've been banned from larger Melee events for a very long time now, almost 2.5 years, and I feel as though I ought to clarify a few things about the situation. I'd like to start by apologizing once again for the manner in which I got banned. I take full responsibility for the damage I caused, and spend every day wishing I had been more considerate of other people. I should probably come clean about the fact that trauma is what misguided me into making those mistakes. The metagame documentary pertained to sensitive information from my youth, which is what evoked such a self-destructive response. I was too blinded by emotions at the time to see how selfish my actions were. I mainly want to shift the understanding away from me having acted with malice or anything like that. There were certain sentences in my ban statement, example, Hax's actions were intentional, which implied that that's what I did. I would never do something like that. It was more so a highly irresponsible outburst. Personally, I thought the statement was okay. At least it was much better than what he wanted to post, and it garnered quite a bit of support at the time. I figured that maybe this could finally be the first time, outside of NYC Melee, that the TOs who banned him in 2021 addressed the situation, and gave us clarity as to why Hacks wasn't allowed at their events in 2023. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. For some reason, Leffen, who had been largely radio silent on the issue ever since Hax's original video, decided he wanted to get involved and give his thoughts on Hax's post. Though it wasn't to show any sort of forgiveness towards Hax, but instead do the one thing he does best. Lie. His tweet starts out with the typical exaggeration you'd expect from your standard Leffen tweet, but then at the bottom of his post, he claims that Hax never apologized to him once. Disregarding the fact that he is literally responding to an apology, Hax had made 3 separate apologies towards Leffen prior to this one. What Leffen is saying here is not only a bold-faced lie, but also a clear-cut attempt at manipulation. And this is when things got interesting. When people caught on that Leffen was lying, Leffen deleted the tweet and posted a new one the next day, stating that he was dropping out of the Big House 11 due to receiving multiple death threats the day prior. And you know what happened next? The entire community completely ignored Hax's plea for an unban and came together to condemn all death threats and harassment. In real time, I had witnessed Leffen manipulate the entire community, and all it took was to say the magic words of death threats to completely derail any potential discourse regarding Hax's ban, and instead shift the conversation to how death threats are bad and how Hax's actions have indirect consequences. Pipsqueak, a true intellectual of our time, came up with the brilliant idea that Hax intentionally made a statement before Leffen went to a big tournament as a way to incite harassment. I'm not kidding. He believed that Hax apologized to Leffen as a way to harass him. At the very least, he believed that Hax should be more cognizant of his actions and how they could lead to harassment, essentially blaming Hax for all the harassment Leffen faced. I thought this was obvious, but apparently it isn't, so I'm gonna have to say it anyways. Hax cannot control the actions of a bunch of random people online who each have their own agency and opinions. Nowhere in Hax's apology did he even say the word Leffen, let alone incite any harassment towards him. Because, you know, it's a fucking apology. Yet somehow the community was hell-bent on attributing all the harassment towards Hax. It doesn't matter that Leffen literally lied the day prior. Like, you don't think that played any role in the harassment he got and that maybe it wasn't Hax? Now Hax, whose only intention was to appeal his ban, was pressured to make not one, but 2 follow-up statements condemning the harassment Leffen was receiving.
Last week when I issued a couple of statements on Twitter, I had no intention of sabotaging his weekend. I just wanted to let people know how much I miss being able to attend events like Big House and Genesis. It did make me realize that I need to advise my fan base and community to please not direct any further negativity toward Leffen's way on my behalf.
Hax was being held to an impossible standard where he was solely responsible for anything bad that happened to Leffen, as if it was his job to protect Leffen at all costs by covering him in bubble wrap or something. Anyways, it's safe to say that Hax's attempt to appeal the ban failed miserably thanks to Leffen. Apparently the TOs would eventually try to discuss the ban in November, but never came to a unanimous decision on a proper ban length, so over the next few months, Hax only grew more and more desperate to get answers as to why why he was still banned, all while at the same time he still had people in his ear telling him to post a video about Leffen and Jisoo. It got to a point where one night, I joined a voice channel in Technical's Discord server to find that Tech was watching a 45-minute video that Hax wanted him to review. He was like, "Franchise, you won't believe what Hax is trying to post right now." And I was like, "Yes, I do, Tech. I've been trying to tell him to not post that exact video for over a year now." Once again, we had to talk him out of posting it. But once again, Hax felt compelled to at least post something on the matter. On January 21st, 2024, Hax would upload a video titled January 2024 Ban Appeal, which was yet another attempt to publicly plead his case for an unban. I am going to play this video in its entirety to provide the full context of what we're dealing with here. Once again, if you want to skip ahead, feel free.
Hi everyone, this is Hax. I'm making this video because at this point I've determined that certain things will never be resolved unless I provide a proper explanation for my actions from a few years ago. This video is not intended to reignite things, but rather to close the void by answering the questions many people still have about the situation surrounding my ban. I'm also hoping to prove my innocence to people, or at least prove to people that I'm not as guilty as they think. The sad truth about what happened a few years ago is that I didn't need to overthink things to such an extent. None of the lengthier videos I released were ever necessary, and I accept the fact that I deserve to serve time for them. However, I wasn't wrong in thinking that I had to speak up in some capacity back during that time period. Now that some time has passed, I'd like to recap the events which were ongoing back then so that I can show what a more reasonable course of action would have looked like. The sequence of events which called me to action a few years ago was spurred by the release of Samox's metagame documentary. Metagame was aired to the general public on December 11, 2020. The second day of the metagame broadcast was notable in that it contained information which pertained to Leffen's ban from 2013. This led to an exchange in which Leffen expressed that he was being defamed by his portrayal within metagame. Samox had no choice but to agree to remove all evidence.zip-related information from metagame due to how much pressure he was faced with that night. Samox then came back 4 months later to let people know that he'd be making it up to Leffen with a ninth episode that would feature him. That episode would air on June 5th, 2021. Samox went on to win awards for producing Metagame, which contains this episode. In the aftermath of this situation, I explained that I was experiencing psychosis back when these events were ongoing. This is something that can happen in response to highly traumatic and abusive circumstances. However, I never explained what those circumstances were, so I'd like to go ahead and do that within this video. On February 9, 2013, Armada announced to Smashboards that Sweden had decided to ban Leffen for 1 year. At the bottom of Armada's post, it mentioned that there were testimonies written during this time period which contained sensitive information. I was actually the one who submitted these testimonies to tournament organizers 12 days later on February 21, 2013. These testimonies are collectively known as evidence.zip. Their contents are in fact very unsettling, and I can't tell you how many times throughout my Melee career I deliberately kept this information a secret so that other people could be happy. I think that I would have successfully made it through my entire career without ever having to reveal this if not for the way the metagame documentary referenced these testimonies. Since I've already alluded to them, I'll continue to tell the story. Within evidence.zip, the cover letter directly explained that there were 9 testimonies in total. The cover letter also explained how urgent it was to ban Leffen at the time. As the years went on, everyone else who wrote these testimonies gradually retired. Armada's retirement in 2018 was notable in that it left me as the last active player in possession of these testimonies, and so I was alone in having this perspective from that point onward. This meant that when Metagame aired, I was the last one who witnessed it through the lens of the testimonies. I'll show a clip of when they were referenced during the second day of the broadcast.
My relationship with Leffen was very bad. We started to see sort of like a pattern, which was sort of like poison for the community, I would say.
Yeah, his trash talk was different, to be honest. It wasn't a brotherly... He went very, very personal with a lot of people, like telling people who've been to mental hospitals twice that they don't respect them, that he doesn't respect them because of their mental health.
And he gets him with the up smash. Early up smash.
Like
kill.
I said,
he taunts.
Always.
Him and I never got off very well. My first interaction with him was that I told him, "Oh, hey, I'm kind of having a really bad hearing issue where I can't really pick up and work at the same level as most people do. What he did in reaction to that was basically making fun of me. Like, he said, oh, but can you hear this? And then he tried, like, mouthing words. It really always felt like he was focusing on my shortcomings as a human being.
The community is sort of like a second family to me, you know? And if someone is acting like this towards, you know, members of the family, I do not really want to interact with that. And I know these people do not want it either. He was banned from Swedish events for about a year.
He got banned by an entire country. A country banned him. That's crazy.
I guess, like, you could see it as, you know, like a betrayal in a sense. But I still think it was, you know, for the right thing for the community to, like, take this stand against it.
It was after this segment aired that Leffen expressed that he was being defamed. I was the only person in the community who strongly disagreed with this, as I knew very well that even the original metagame run was tame in comparison to what was written in the evidence.zip testimonies. I've made the testimonies publicly available so that people can see that I'm not exaggerating or making things up. I sincerely apologize to the people who wrote these testimonies 11 years ago, but they've become a liability for me to have, as they cause me to view things through a different lens than other people. I think it's for the greater good that these testimonies are made available as a public resource at this point. Please note that Niklas Ringberger and Carl Johan Boland's testimonies have been excluded, as those are two of the more sensitive ones. I'll show a few excerpts so that people can understand why I was so stressed out a few years ago. The cover letter continued to explain that for years, Leffen has imposed on the happiness of countless members of our community. His unparalleled hatred and vulgarity leave people feeling belittled and attacked wherever he goes. His self-righteousness, manipulation, lies, superiority complex, nonsensical reasons for attacking people, and refusal to change make him a threat to not only the Smash community, but society. There was also a testimony that contained an excerpt which read, if people actually took the time to wrap their heads around what actions Leffen has exhibited toward me, Hacks, and many more, the thought of doing anything less than not welcoming him to any future tournaments or gatherings is ludicrous. The mere thought of it is preposterous, and the act of allowing the things he'll subject others to is nothing less than grotesque and an act of cruelty toward his targets. You must understand that he has yet proven to show any sign of remorse whatsoever concerning his actions, how they affect people, what they have to go through and put up with. Nor how it affects not only them, but poisons the entire atmosphere and well-being of the community as a whole. He impeccably dismisses and declines any invitation or attempt to inquire in any form of dialogue or conversation regarding the situation. He just doesn't seem to care at all. And until that fact changes, it'd be preposterous to invite, accept, or allow this guy anywhere near the people he constantly subjects to acts of malicious intent, not to forget or undermine the urgency in sparing any new potential prospects. The indecency in prolonging this is truly nothing less than an act of cruelty. It was because of excerpts like these that I viewed the 9th episode of Metagame as being so horrible. Within the episode, there's no mention of the evidence.zip victims whatsoever. There are also segments in which history is revised by making it seem as though Armada plotted a conspiracy against Leffen. This is completely illegitimate, and one of the many reasons why I'm of the opinion that the episode should be banned. To conclude things, I created this video in order to clarify why that controversy happened. I'm pleading for some empathy from community leaders and tournament organizers given how extreme these circumstances were. I was having a difficult time accepting these circumstances back when they were ongoing, and should have refrained from responding to them so hastily. I'm sorry for the hyperbole and paranoia that I exhibited on the original video. I confess that this was unnecessary. While the metagame revision was triggering, it wasn't the end of the world as I made it out to be. I apologize to Leffen and the community for projecting that narrative. I should also clarify that I'm not looking to hold Leffen accountable for what was explained in this video. I'm only looking to provide a record of the factual truth that I witnessed during that time period, which contrasted from what others witnessed. I'd like to go back to being an entertainer and contributor for the community, but in order to do that, I've realized that I have to clear my name from this. I believe the fairest outcome would be a more neutral settlement in which it's acknowledged that there were circumstances which led to this, but that I needed to do better even when being faced with those circumstances. I hope the community accepts this proposal and explanation, as I can't afford to relegate myself to the current understanding many people have of the situation. Many people think that I did this baselessly and maliciously, and that absolutely isn't true. I'm sorry for ever creating this misconception. Aside from that, I've spoken my truth and will be submitting this video to TOs in the hopes of resolving my ban situation. Thank you for watching.
In this new appeal video, Hacks chose to go more in depth as to why he felt compelled to make Evidence.zip 2. He argued that due to his intimate involvement with banning Leffen in 2013, he saw the situation with the metagame documentary differently than most people, and felt the need to speak out. But most importantly, he makes it exceedingly clear that he was wrong in how he handled the situation, needed to do better, and deserved to serve time for his actions. And once again, he apologized directly to Leffen. He also stated from the outset that his goal was not to reignite things with Leffen, but solely to give context to his motivations for making his videos. So how was this video received by the community? Did it finally spark some important discourse regarding his ban? Well, it did, but not in the way any of us could have imagined. On January 23rd, just 2 days after the video was published, NYC Melee posted a statement regarding Hacks' latest video, stating that they had decided to permanently ban Hacks with no chance to appeal. And just like that, everything we had worked towards, and all the progress we made over the past 2.5 years to unban Hacks, was seemingly dashed to bits and pieces. And the worst part was that this ban was easily the most ticky-tacky BS decision to have been made up to this point. If you thought Mikey's document was bad, just wait until you read the rest of this one. In their statement, NYC Melee claims that Hacks was banned due to violating the first two clauses of his conditional unban. The first clause stated that the banned individual releases no further public statements about fellow community members, which can be considered in violation of Code of Conduct Rules 2.2.1 and 2.2.3. Essentially, don't do the same things that got you banned in the first place, in this case, defamation and harassment. The panel argued that mentioning Leffen's ban in 2013 and the testimonies from Leffen's victims is somehow defamatory. I'm not even kidding. Even mentioning the original Evidence.zip, a real event that happened, was somehow lying about Leffen and thus a punishable offense for Hacks. I would love for them to explain how that could possibly be the case. The second clause stated that the banned individual engages in no additional interviews or public discussions on the topic of their ban for their own social media channels or any others. If you just thought to yourself, hey, that sounds like a completely stupid and unnecessary overreach of the TO's power. Why would they include a clause like that? A day later, the head TO of NYC Melee at the time, Julia P., formerly known as Willie P., tried to justify the panel's decision by stating, "I do not believe Hacks himself encourages the threats or harassment against others. But whether intentional or not, when your consistent actions have consistent consequences, it is up to you to correct that or to plain stop those actions." Disregarding that she completely ignored that Hacks condemned and apologized for the harassment that came Leffen's way during the Big House situation, which is, in fact, an attempt to correct that, as she puts it, her whole argument essentially boils down to this. Every time Hacks posts about his ban, people are mean to Leffen, so he needs to stop posting about his ban, regardless of his intentions. First of all, as I said before, Hacks was not, and should not have been, responsible for the actions of random weirdos online, especially when he never encouraged or directed anyone to harass Leffen, and has explicitly condemned harassment towards Leffen. Even in this new ban appeal, he says at the start that the video was not intended to reignite things. How, on God's green earth, can you possibly claim that this video incites harassment? If he were trying to relitigate things with Leffen, that would be a completely different story. But he explicitly condemned his actions towards Leffen multiple times in the video. If people, completely of their own volition and against the wishes of Hacks, decide to target Leffen with harassment and death threats, why should any of the blame fall on Hacks? Also, you don't think that maybe most of the harassment and negativity that Leffen receives is cultivated by Leffen himself? For years, he's openly been a toxic and condescending asshole literally everywhere he goes. There are several gaming communities who hate Leffen completely independently of Hacks. You guys don't think the reason there's so much vitriol towards Leffen is because of the energy he puts out into the world? In regards to the Big House situation specifically, Leffen posted a lie literally the day before he dropped out. Again, you don't think that had any impact on the harassment he got? And what's ironic is that later in the same document, she contradicts herself by blaming the harassment that she was getting on a mob of technical stands and explicitly stating that she does not blame Hacks for it. I genuinely don't get it. Are the rabid online Smash weirdos Technicals fans or Hacks fans? Why does that even matter to begin with? Are they not their own people with their own agency to make their own decisions? Again, Hacks cannot control the actions of random people online. He can, however, control what he says in posts, but so long as his posts do not encourage harassment towards Leffen and actively disavows it, I don't see how in any way he can be held responsible for it. Aside from the violations they cited, the line that really pissed me off the most and displayed a complete lack of acknowledgement for Hax's situation was this line where they mentioned how they hoped Hax could move past this. Hey, newsflash, but just because you guys unbanned Hax doesn't mean the situation is resolved. He's still banned everywhere else. And once again, it's ironic because in Julia's follow-up document, she even acknowledges that there was no true concrete path for Hax to follow to get unbanned at a national level. So how exactly was Hax supposed to move past this when he's still banned elsewhere? Bonus points for the sentence that comes right after, where they say Hax can't let go of his original motivations in regards to a video where Hax is literally saying he was in the wrong. It's as if they purposefully ignored everything that was said in Hax's video so they could ban him. Remember how I said earlier that some TOs genuinely wanted to just search for any reason they could to ban Hax? That's honestly how I feel about this decision, even though the people involved swear this wasn't the case, because this was an incredibly ticky-tacky reason to ban someone. But Franchise, if he didn't want to get re-banned, then he should have just followed the clauses that he agreed to. Wow, it's almost as if he had literally no other choice but to agree to them if he ever wanted to return. What was the alternative? To never play the game again? How is that a fair proposition at all? And even if you truly believe that Hax deserved to be punished for violating the clauses, can we agree that a permanent ban with no chance to appeal is an insane punishment? Like, they went from, we gave him warnings in the past, to issuing what is quite literally the harshest and most severe punishment they could have possibly imposed. All because he posted a video in which he literally apologizes and says he was in the wrong for going after Leffen. This video was incredibly innocuous. Maybe he could have tweaked a few things here or there. Obviously, dedicating almost 7 minutes to talking about Leffen when you're already on thin ice is probably not the best idea. But really, his only crime was that instead of sending this video privately to TOs, he posted it publicly to his channel. If you really think that's a crime, you cannot convince me that the punishment NYC gave fits the crime in any capacity whatsoever. And luckily, I wasn't alone on this. In response to NYC's decision, Edwin Budding tweeted out, 100% support this decision by NYC Melee, in saying that online vultures think they have a better grasp on Hax than people who have literally known him for several years and came to this conclusion. So who are these online vultures that Edwin speaks of? Well, let me introduce you to just a handful of them, so you get an idea of what we're dealing with. Here's Toussaint, top Jigglypuff player from New York, who wholeheartedly disagreed with the decision. Here's the Swooper, top Samus player from New Jersey, also completely disagreed with the decision. Here's Django, a player and commentator from NYC, who was very outspoken against the decision. Here's Aklo, the number one ranked player in NYC, and the number 10 ranked player in the world at the time, saying he didn't agree with the decision even after a conversation with the TOs. Here's Dark Genix, former TO for NYC Melee, saying he voted against a permanent ban and in favor of a temporary 1 month suspension. Now if you just thought to yourself, hey, those don't sound like random online vultures, but rather integral members of the NYC Melee community, you'd be 1000% correct. In fact, every single person I just mentioned was also a close friend of Hax for years. But according to our great friend Edwin, these people are online vultures who don't know Hax and don't understand the situation. And remember, Julia P also tried to do a similar thing by reducing the massive backlash to a mob of technical stans. Rather than acknowledge that they were making an incredibly unpopular decision that went against the wishes of their own community, they still insisted that it was only a vocal minority on the fringes of the community that opposed the permaban. You'd have to be so absurdly out of touch to look at the reception the decision was getting and think this way. And this is when defeat turned to optimism. While the initial news of the ban was heartbreaking, seeing such an overwhelmingly negative response from almost every corner of the community actually gave me a little hope. For the first time ever, it seemed like Hax had the majority of the community on his side, and I felt like all Hax had to do was ride this newfound wave of support. And maybe, just maybe, the TOs would finally be willing to reconsider their stances. On January 28th, just a few days after NYC Melee's statement, Hax finally did it. He posted the one video I had been telling him not to post from the very beginning. No, I did not sign off on him posting this video, as he never even ran it by me in the first place. I was, and still am, furious that this video was released. I not only complained about it on Twitter several times, but also did a live stream showcasing my displeasure. This was the moment that I felt truly killed any chance of Hax's reintegration back into the Melee scene. At least with NYC's decision, there was loads of public backlash and community-wide support for Hax. This new video was indefensible, and at this point, I felt there was nothing else I could do to help Hax. A few days later, those same TOs that never truly unbanned him in the first place released a statement officially permanently banning Hax from the community. The next few months were rough, to say the least. Hax's mental state was rapidly beginning to deteriorate as he slowly began to realize that his career in Melee was as good as dead. But rather than move on to something else in life, Hax still remained laser-focused on trying to overturn the TO's decision at all costs. We tried to tell him that the situation, largely due to his most recent video, was beyond cooked. At the very least, if he was still going to appeal his ban, he shouldn't bank on it, and should instead focus on building a life for himself outside of Melee. But he wasn't interested in that, and remained committed to returning to the game. Hax released a few more videos and statements over the ensuing months, and they all seemed okay, until on May 24th, Mikey would release yet another statement basically confirming that Hax wasn't going to get unbanned. But what was most triggering was a line where Mikey said that Hax was defending his original claims against Leffen when speaking with TOs privately. At first, I didn't believe this to be true, as I thought Hax had learned his lesson after everything that had happened up to that point. But then that same day, Julia posted screenshots confirming that Hax was, in fact, standing by everything he said in his original video. When you remember that NYC said that they weren't considering further appeals on their decision, the fact that Hax was even talking to Julia about his ban at all was a miracle and opportunity I could have never imagined. And once again, he blew it like a complete idiot for no reason. Every time I thought the situation couldn't get any worse, it somehow did. And then when I asked Hax about it, he said, "I'm recording a video right now to try to argue against it." As if there was anything left to argue. Even after everything that had happened over the past 4 months, he was still completely oblivious and still felt that the situation could be salvaged. A few days later, DarkGenix, with Hax's permission, released a document discussing just how dire Hax's situation truly was. While many of these things had been known behind the scenes, this was the first time this information had been made public. Genix revealed that Hax had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, was having genuine suicidal thoughts due to his over-reliance on Melee for his mental health and income, and had been placed in and released from a psychiatric hospital twice. Hax has spent the last 19 years of his life dedicating virtually his entire life to playing the game. He does not have friends outside of the community who he talks to regularly. All of his end goals regarding self-improvement are tied to him wishing to return to the Melee scene. His financial situation is also tied with the game. He has not worked a job outside of Box and earnings from being a top player. And while he does live with his family and is subsidized to some degree, without his share of income which he used to get from events, his family cannot afford their apartment. For the last 19 years, his finances, social life, values, and thus his mental stability are all tied with Melee. Melee is all he knows, and it is all he has.
Okay, so I forgot to put this part in the script, so I'll just add this in right now. Remember that moderator Orez from earlier that told Hax to make the Leffen and Jisoo video? Well, in April, I learned that he decided it'd be really funny to troll Hax and pretend that he was a double agent paid off by Leffen to keep Hax banned. DarkGenix also brought this up in his document as well, and believes that this was a huge reason for Hax's second hospitalization. And more recently, I found out that it wasn't just Orez, but an entire group chat of people trolling and making fun of Hax throughout the entire situation. Tech had an entire segment about them in his video, so go check that out if you want to learn more. But yeah, after convincing him to make the one video that completely ruined any chances of him getting unbanned, they then proceeded to mock and troll Hax in the most vile ways possible, resulting in yet another hospitalization.
This was the first time people truly understood the gravity of the situation. Now more than ever did Hax need our help, but at the same time, it seemed like there was nothing left we could do to help him. Of course, I, and many others, knew that the real solution to the problem was to unban Hacks because the ban was stupid to begin with, but considering all the self-sabotaging Hacks had done over the past few months, it had become increasingly difficult for me to continue to advocate for an unban. In fact, many people took this new information to further their idea that allowing Hacks back at events would only cause more damage. On May 31st, 2024, Technicals would post his highly anticipated video titled The Victims of Leffen, where he covered many of Leffen's controversies over the years and advocated for Hacks' return to the Melee community. Considering I was just featured on his Smash World Tour video, it would only make sense that I would also be featured in this one as well, right? Well, actually, he did offer me the chance to collab, but because I felt the situation was beyond cooked, I declined the offer. At the time, I felt any attempt to try to get Hacks unbanned would go down in vain, and while I certainly supported Tech's video and wanted to see an unban for Hacks, my support was ultimately from a distance, as I felt too emotionally drained from the past few months to get involved outside of making a now indefinitely postponed Frame 1 video. As for Tech's video, just like every other video on the subject, while well received by those who watched it, failed to really change the minds of the community leadership. However, it did stir up quite the community discourse. The day after Tech posted his video, Leffen decided to crawl out of his cave and address the video, accusing Tech of using people who are suicidal for a quick AdSense buck. I don't know if you know this, Big Lef, but you're one of the primary reasons he's suicidal. Also, let's not pretend that Leffen has ever cared about Hacks' mental health at any point in his career. This is the same guy who leaked Hacks' insomnia to the public, somehow claimed victim status in the situation, and then mentioned it again just a couple years later. And yes, the TOs do explicitly defend Leffen for this, but I digress. Literally all Leffen had to do was show some level of forgiveness towards Hacks, and they could have gone back to playing Melee. Instead, he had to keep up this facade that his life was perpetually in danger because Hacks was just that much of a threat to his, and now apparently his entire family's safety. And you want to know what's ironic about that? Greg Turbo, who was also mentioned in Tech's video, responded by releasing 300 pages worth of depositions from his lawsuit with Hacks. These depositions were previously not publicly available, and within the first few pages contained Hacks' home address. Guess who signal boosted it? Mikey, Julia, Leffen, all of them. And when it was discovered that Hacks had been doxxed, rather than acknowledge that they messed up, they all tried to lie and say that it wasn't actually Hacks' address, and then privated their accounts. And still, to this day, none of them have taken any accountability for this situation, and Greg has faced no consequences for posting Hacks' address. Keep in mind, these are the exact same people who were complaining about harassment and death threats caused by Hacks' apologies, yet when they signal boost Hacks' home address, suddenly they're allowed to lie and downplay the severity of the situation. And this might just be a coincidence, but you'll never guess what happened just a few days later. Hacks got hospitalized yet again. The next time I spoke to Tech after his video went live, he was pretty irritated. He told me that he finally understood why I didn't feel like getting involved anymore with the Hacks case. He said that Hacks was completely ungrateful for the video, and how it was almost impossible to help Hacks, because Hacks always knows what's best, and you have no clue what you're talking about. And I responded with, yeah, I know. One thing I distinctly remember from my conversation with Tech was that Hacks claimed that Tech's new video burned the bridge between him and Julia. Keep in mind that Tech's video came out after Julia had already blocked Hacks. The fact that Hacks believed that only now the bridge had been burned once again goes to show how oblivious he was to the situation he was in and the impact his actions had in sabotaging himself. And worst of all, this wouldn't stop. Throughout the rest of the month, Hacks decided to take matters into his own hands and did a lot of inappropriate things in an attempt to appeal his ban. I don't know the full extent of what he did, and I think this is the time when Julia accused him of stalking, but I do know that at one point he tried to show up to the nightclub venue to discuss an unban. While I understand that he was getting desperate, and he also claimed that he got permission before he entered the venue, again, when just 1 month ago the head TO of NYC Melee had publicly stated that they blocked you, it's probably not the best idea to show up in person to make your appeal. Again, this is just one of the many things he did around this time, and I'd imagine that his actions further muddied any chances of an unban. The following month, the Mexican tournament series Smash Factor, one of the few events that actually allowed Hacks to compete in 2023, chose not to follow the other organizers in banning Hacks in 2024. Instead, they ran a Facebook poll asking whether or not they should allow Hacks, and the results were overwhelmingly in favor of allowing Hacks to compete. Going into the event, I had my concerns that Hacks would somehow find a way to mess this up and give the community yet another reason to keep him banned, but to my surprise, he didn't. It actually went extremely well, and it seemed like everyone who went had positive things to say.
But what I can say is that, yeah, when it came to S Factor, he went to the event, he competed, you know, it was fine. Nothing happened, and it was fine.
But of course, since this is the Smash community, this event couldn't escape being controversial. Some people really hated that a major Smash tournament made their own decision, and didn't consult the American TOs for their opinion to make a more informed decision. Melee Stats chose to avoid mentioning that the tournament was happening on their blog, and Jackzilla even went as far as to compare Hax's actions to transphobia and soliciting a minor. I need you guys to understand, this is the level of vitriol that some people had when it came to the Hacks case, and anyone who stepped out of line. This is also why when I was told there were TOs pressuring other organizers to keep Hacks banned from their events, I 100% believe it. They unironically tried to argue that Hacks was an evil threat to the community that needed to be avoided at all costs when, as seen by his attendance at Smash Factor that weekend, that was clearly not the case. All Hacks wanted to do was play the game he loved with the community he once called home. Nothing more, nothing less. And every time he was given that opportunity, he did not disappoint. And luckily, Smash Factor was no exception. So after everything that had transpired that year, I felt that this tournament would be a turning point and help swing the pendulum back in Hacks' favor. A month after Smash Factor 11, on August 18th, Hacks posted an incredibly concerning tweet where it seemed like he was, in simplest terms, saying goodbye. Several days passed, and still nobody had heard anything from Hacks until on August 28th, I got a message from someone saying, "I have contact with him. He is safe. Things are not good, but he is safe." While I was at least relieved that he was still alive, I still had no clue what "things are not good" entailed.
I hit him up 2 days ago, because I was feeling the same way. He said that he tried to commit suicide, and that it was really fucking bad. And I tried to talk to him more, and he has not responded. I'm scared. I'm actually scared.
It was later revealed that on August 20th, Hacks had attempted to jump in front of a train. While by some miracle he had survived, he had to get one of his legs amputated below the knee.
And that's just your chest socket. I was worried. That's just your chest disease.
I was worried.
No, you look good, Aziz. You don't even look like you have a prosthetic on.
Oh my goodness, it works. I can't believe it. This kind of feels like a real leg.
The one thing that everyone feared would happen had come to fruition. And yet when this news finally hit the timeline, instead of taking a moment to self-reflect and discuss how this could have been prevented, the community just wanted to tweet out their thoughts and prayers and leave it at that. There was no introspection, and anyone who tried to bring up the fact that this could have easily been prevented was immediately cast as trying to use this for their agenda or whatever. The attempt scared Hacks, to say the least, and kinda gave him a new outlook on things. He started streaming regularly on Twitch, offering lessons to other players, and even got in contact with the newly formed conduct panel in the community to try and see if he could get unbanned. In fact, after talking behind the scenes, I learned that by March of this year, the new conduct panel was about 60% of the way towards signing off for Hacks to attend events again. And on top of that, a new local had been created in NYC, and they allowed Hacks to attend. For the first time in a long time, it seemed like things were finally trending upwards for Hacks again.
This is a new year. I'm looking forward to good things, man. I think the bad stuff is in the past, and I'm just ready to be the version of myself that the community wants, knew, and loved. I'm looking forward to it, guys. It's gonna be a good year.
So yeah, I got a last word.
What's up?
Let's just play the goddamn game. That's all right. Let's play the game.
That sounds good to me. That sounds good.
Play the game. All right. Let's stop this bullshit, please. Let's stop it. So with that being said, this is your boy West. I'm out of here. Peace.
Peace out, guys. Have a good night.
So yeah, That's basically the entire timeline from the beginning until now. The situation lasted almost 4 years, and not only was this literally the worst possible outcome we could have gotten, but anyone with half a brain knew that this was easily avoidable. Hax's ban, while maybe well-intentioned from the start, had been completely and utterly mishandled on so many levels throughout the years, and was ultimately the main catalyst for where we are today. I strongly believe that if we had only banned Hax for like a couple months in 2021, we would be living in a much better timeline than where we are today. And this is something that many people discussing the situation fail to engage with. Much of the focus regarding this case immediately shifts to 2024, and everything bad that Hax did that year. But every action Hax took last year, while I don't defend or support, and even publicly criticized at times, was made in effort to overturn the ban. Hax didn't have the tools to dig himself out of the hole he was in, and ended up digging himself deeper and deeper until the situation was cooked, but it was ultimately the TO's fault for throwing him in a hole to begin with. If more TOs were willing to unban Hax in 2023, we would have never been in this situation. If NYC Melee didn't permanently ban Hax for a completely bogus reason in 2024, we would have never been in this situation. If everyone had even an ounce of mercy, compassion, or empathy, we would have never been in this situation. The fact that after serving 2.5 years of time, there was still a ban to appeal at all is a huge problem that everyone just seems to overlook. And this is why I believe the TOs should be held partially responsible for where we are today. Now, it may sound like I'm using the term TOs to refer to all of them as a monolith, and I think it's important to remember that there were plenty of TOs who wanted to help Hax and were considering an unban. Not every TO was out to get Hax, and I don't want to equate them with the ones that were. But unless you actually went through with unbanning Hax, are you really any different from the ones who wanted to keep him banned at all costs? Because realistically, what's the difference between a TO who refused to unban Hax and a TO who wanted to, but didn't? Both are deserving of criticism, it's just that some deserve more criticism than others. Also, I'm not going to give you guys credit because you discussed the ban over 2 years after you issued it. The only TOs who truly deserve credit here are those who actually stepped up to the plate and unbanned Hax from their events. For example, even though I still 1000% stand by everything I said in my videos criticizing them, I still think someone who deserves far more praise in this situation is Gimmer and VGBC, because when they hosted their final Melee Xanadu ever, even after everything that had happened that year, and even in the face of all the social pressure, Gimmer allowed Hax to play because it was the right thing to do, and for that I will forever be grateful. Another common argument I saw after the permaban was, why couldn't he just move on from Smash and do something else? There's more to life than playing a Nintendo party game. While you aren't wrong, I genuinely want you to put yourself in Hax's shoes for a moment. Hax had been a part of this community for most of his life. All of his friends were in this community, and he even had a company in this community. Melee was everything to him. When he injured his hand and was told he would have to stop playing, rather than move on to something else in life, he created his own special controller that allowed him and others like him to continue to play the game he loved dearly. I think it's fair to say that Hax loved Melee more than anyone else in this community. Melee was his biggest passion in life, and to have the thing you're most passionate about ripped away from you for all those years would drive anyone insane, and it most certainly took its toll on Hax. Especially when you remember that Hax had also spent the past 2 years groveling at the feet of the community and begging for forgiveness, only for that same community he loved and gave everything he had to reject him. I think it shouldn't come as a surprise that Hax started to become desperate in 2024. Now obviously, if getting banned from a grassroots competitive gaming community completely upends your life the way it did for Hax, there's a serious issue with the way you're living your life, and it could easily be argued that Hax's passion for Melee bordered on being an unhealthy obsession. But pretending that unbanning Hax was only a band-aid solution to a deeper issue, while not entirely wrong, implies that A, the ban played no role in Hax's mental decline, and B, the ban was perfectly fair and not mishandled in any way by all the TOs who imposed it. But I think we can all agree that neither of those were the case. So when people tried to tell Hax to touch grass and to move on, every time he tried to appeal his permaban in 2024, Hax shouldn't have been forced to move on to begin with. Also, considering that he's literally dead now, I think unbanning him from events would have been a lot more than just a band-aid solution. Like seriously, what did the community have to lose by unbanning him? A random guy in Sweden would be really upset? No one, not even the TOs, actually thought Hacks was a threat to anyone. And when Hacks was allowed to attend events, everyone had great things to say about him. It wouldn't have cost us anything to unban him. It was never that deep to begin with, but it only became a serious issue because for years the TOs were unwilling to compromise and show any semblance of forgiveness. There's actually a video by our great friend Mikey which illustrates my point perfectly. He mentions how he's a consequentialist, meaning that he believes that the consequences of one's actions are ultimately more important than the intentions behind those actions. And while I certainly agree that the consequences are the most important thing, to act like intentions don't matter at all when assessing the morality and severity of someone's actions is just insane. In our legal system, there is a difference between first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter, self-defense. They all fall under the same umbrella of homicide, but we don't punish all of them equally, even though the outcomes are the exact same. In the Hacks case, however, there was a callous disregard for Hacks' intentions when it came to determining a punishment. In almost every statement on the topic, you can see T.O. saying things like, whether intentional or not, or while his intent may not have been malicious, as if the intent behind his actions shouldn't be taken into account whatsoever. And look, event organizers have every legal right to deny someone entry from their events, for whatever reason they feel is valid. But you can't be so punitive with your own community and then act upset and surprised when that same community thinks you're power tripping. In the case of NYC Melee, they went from giving Hacks warnings to giving him the harshest punishment they possibly could over the most inconsequential video imaginable. Why should I, or anyone, believe that you weren't either actively looking for a reason to ban Hacks or pressured by outside influences to make the decision. Even back when you unbanned him, it still came with a bunch of dumb clauses like, you can't talk about your ban publicly, or you can't ask to rejoin the organizing group for the tournament series you created. How is this not an insane overreach of their power? I think it's important to bring this up, because it's stuff like this that creates a lack of trust between the community and its leaders. And don't even get me started on the people who want to talk about how sad this is, but refuse to do the most basic self-reflection on how they may have played a part in Hacks' demise. I see people like Slime trying to tell others that they never cared about Hacks. And genuinely, how dare you pretend that you of all people are in any position to lecture anyone about Hacks' mental state? Similarly, people like Chroma will openly mock and ridicule Hacks while spreading his docs, and then in the exact same breath, turn around and remind us that it is, in fact, us that are not taking Hacks' mental health seriously. Then after Hacks dies, I have to see the opinions of this guy who will acknowledge that he never spoke to or interacted with Hacks in any way, shape, or form, yet somehow believes that he is the only person in the community who is injecting any sort of nuance into the situation by reducing it down to, it's nobody's fault. Have you ever considered for a second that it was actually you who was part of the problem and not the people who tried to support and advocate for Hacks? Next, I want to address the top players and figureheads who either did nothing at all or could have done and said much more when the situation was still ongoing. This is where I'm a bit more conflicted, because while I'd rather direct any sort of anger at the people who actively hurt Hacks and kept him banned, there's still something to be said about the immense fear our community leaders exhibited when it came to discussing this case publicly.
Before I let you out of here though, one more thing, one last thing. Can I get a free Hacks?
Oh my god.
I'm kidding! Get out of here! I'm not trying to get you, I'm kidding! I'm kidding!
And what's ironic is that we all love to make fun of Hacks for comparing this community to 20th century totalitarian regimes, yet one of the biggest reasons for why people chose not to speak up for Hacks, or why TOs refrained from allowing Hacks at their events, was the social pressure associated with going against the status quo.
You know, people saw him as the boogeyman. You would get ostracized for allowing him in your events. You would get harassed for speaking to him or defending him. This community made it so difficult for progress to actually happen because we fucking self-cannibalize. Like I said.
And while I do appreciate that some people decided to advocate for Hacks privately, why did everything have to happen in private? What's wrong with trying to spark public discourse on the subject? I already know what the answer is. It's that this community is super toxic when it comes to this situation in particular, and discussing it publicly leads to harassment against Leffen and the TOs. If you remember from earlier, this is the reason why NYC Melee wanted Hax to stop posting about his ban, regardless of his intentions. It's also part of the reason why people like me are so thoroughly frowned upon in this community every time we try to speak up about a certain topic or issue. In their eyes, I'm just a drama YouTuber who feeds into the toxicity and makes everyone's lives miserable in the process. I need to say this, and this is 100% a whataboutism, but can we at least acknowledge the selective outrage in this community when it comes to harassment? When the whole Smash World Tour situation was going down, both communities, Melee and Ultimate, in unison, waged a massive civil war against Panda Global and Dr. Allen, leading to not only historic levels of harassment in the community, but also the complete collapse of Panda as an organization. And it didn't just negatively impact people in the community. Panda had several members who had absolutely nothing to do with Smash who were affected by this as well. Obviously, Leffen and the TOs have received a ton of uncalled for harassment over the years, especially in the wake of Hax's death. But what they've received is still peanuts compared to what Panda players and employees had to deal with, almost all of which had nothing to do with the situation. Yet only one instance of harassment became the forefront of the conversation and completely overshadowed any other concerns being expressed at the time. With Panda, there was no, why couldn't all of this be handled privately? Every single grievance was going to be aired out publicly, everyone even lightly associated with the org was going to get caught in the crossfire.
Every day, I was getting I was getting DMs, I was getting messages, I was getting replies to that, I was getting added, like, what's your stance? How dare you support Panda? What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? What is you, like, you're terrible, blah, blah, blah.
And this was somehow a net positive for the community. Yes, this is the same Edwin Budding from before. But for the Hax case, if you even dared to speak about the case publicly, you were somehow part of the problem. And this is just one example of the community picking and choosing when they care about harassment. Like, seriously, and I really don't want to say this, but imagine if something were to happen to Leffen at a tournament. People like me, Hax, Technicals, we wouldn't hear the end of it. We would forever be known as the people who incited a terrorist attack on the Super Smash Bros. Competitive gaming community. And yet, when Leffen fuels a mass harassment campaign against Hungrybox that leads to Hungrybox getting assaulted at an event, suddenly it's nobody's fault, and Hax is schizophrenic to even think that Leffen could have played a role in it. Speaking of Leffen, I'm gonna end this off by addressing him, and I'm gonna make this as brief as I can. If the past 4 years have taught me anything, it's that Leffen will never be held accountable or face any consequence for any of the things he's done over the years. There will always be an excuse, there will always be someone willing to defend him, and there will always be a way for Leffen to play the victim and garner sympathy, even when he's the one at fault. Leffen can do anything he wants and get away with it, and the community will not only accept it as normal, but applaud and reward his behavior. I think it's about time that someone puts their foot down and shows this community that we are no longer willing to tolerate Leffen any longer. So now that we've covered basically everything, I just want to talk about this channel and my plans moving forward. Obviously, I'm not going to stop covering Smash on my channel. If there's something in this community worth talking about, I'm going to cover it. It just most likely won't be the main focus of the channel anymore. I've been wanting to branch out into other topics for a while now anyways, i.e. those chess videos, and I'm only gonna branch out more moving forward. I will say up front that when I do make videos about the Smash community, don't expect my videos to be constructive. I no longer have any interest in helping to improve this community, because if the past 4 years have taught me anything, it's that this community is unwilling to improve itself. Every time I've tried to speak up and start a genuine dialogue regarding the Hax situation, I was immediately dismissed and antagonized for drama farming or whatever. And look, to an extent, I understand why people feel this way. Having someone constantly dunking on the thing you're most passionate about probably isn't very fun. But if someone believes that there is a legitimate problem in this community, and you refuse to acknowledge their concern because it hurts your feelings, you're only making the community worse in the long run. We've been trying to have this conversation about Hax for years, and all you guys did was ignore us. And only after he died, those same people who didn't want anything to do with this case suddenly feel that now it's time to have a productive conversation about what needs to change moving forward. I'm sorry, but no. It's not time to be constructive. It's time to be destructive. Because genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, you guys deserve it.